Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, October 31st. It's Halloween. I'm Ray Graff. Time for another edition of the Writers Forum. And on this Halloween, we devote the show to scariness. Join us in the studio today will be Barbara Chepitis. Lolly Davidson is on the phone, and Kelvin Correga is here. Hey, you believe in ghosts? Do you have a ghost story to share with us? Feel free to call 800-348-2551. Yeah, don't scare the pants off us, but if it's a good story, call 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. The number is 800-348-2551, a writer's forum dedicated to scaring you right after the news. Hello again, friends. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Writers Forum today, and today it's all about ghost stories. Do you believe in ghosts? Things that go bump in the night? Well, give us a call, 800-348-2551. Barbara Chepitis is with us today, author of a dozen published novels and a wonderful human being. Lolly Davidson, a professor of writing at SUNY Adirondack. Lolly's short story collection is the word, Strange Appetites, won the Adirondack Center for Writing's People's Choice Award. And also with us is Kelvin Correga, an actor, storyteller, writer living in Greenwich, New York. He's produced and performed in Whispering Bones for the last, 13 years now? It's a lucky number. Let's talk ghost stories today. 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Since one guest is on the phone, let's introduce Lolly Davidson first. Hello, Lolly. How are you?
Hello, Ray. I'm great. Glad to be here in one form or another.
Ooh, your disembodied voice.
I also have three novels I thought I should mention, and one is a ghost story set in Saratoga Springs.
So. Oh, really? Oh, we'll talk about that in a minute. I'd love to hear what that's all about. All right, Kelvin Correga, how you doing there, buddy?
Very good, sir. Very good. Thank you.
How is the Whispering Bones project going? What do you have going this year?
Well, this is great. Tonight is our fourth performance, and we've had a great run. Two sold-out shows, a bunch of people up in Bennington last night, big crowd. And tonight we go to the Abbey Theater at Proctor's for the Eighth Step to do our last show. And it's a mix of comic bits and some very dark stories. The Occupant in the Room by Algernon Blackwood, Claremont by Théophile Gautier, and some very light things as well. So it's been a great set of performers. It's a big success. So I hope people come down tonight to the Abbey and see the show.
Now, is this family-oriented, or will you scare the young ones to death?
Yeah, it's more for students and adults.
Okay.
Because I think for little kids would probably be over their heads a bit, but it's more focused for teenagers and above.
Okay.
I think that's better.
Now, I'm getting word from Zach, the engineer, that you should just pull that microphone a little closer to you.
How's that? Is that better?
That's what you can. Yeah, you can move it actually closer. There we are.
Oh, there we go.
Don't be afraid.
You're scaring me, Barbara Chepitis. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm hanging in there.
You've written a ghost story book, or it's almost done?
It's called Honey from the Bones, The Care and Feeding of Our Ghosts.
Oh. Okay, yes. And just give me a quick précis on that.
That's really okay. It took me like 2 years, because it's nonfiction mostly, to sort of find the voice and find how to structure it, and now I'm like diving in. But it tells ghost stories from my own experience, from a bunch I've collected from other people. I'll be interviewing a person who does regular ghost work. I'll be hopefully going to Lilydale, which is a community of mediums and psychics in Western New York.
This is a nonfiction book you're writing?
Yeah, it's nonfiction.
Interesting.
More or less, you know. It's got some fiction interspersed with it, and that was part of my, you know, do I write this? I'm such a transgenre type of
girl. Yeah, you sure are.
I really am. And bisexual as well.
That's good for you.
So it's got a bunch of different, and it will also have recipes.
What?
Recipes, because it's about the care and feeding of our ghosts.
So ghosts eat, then?
Well, some of them.
Well, we'll hold that thought.
All right.
Lolly Davidson, what's your ghost book about?
Well, it's set in Saratoga Springs, and it says, "Ghosts of a Dark Capitalist Past Awaken and Challenge a Young Woman's Powers." So there's a young woman who's in college. She's going to SUNY Adirondack, and she, of course, kind of falls in love with this guy named Damien, and on a hoot, they go to a haunted house, and he becomes possessed. And so she then she's been suppressing her powers. She has to learn how to use them to release him. But the ghost, there's a couple of ghosts in this story. And so the mystery is sort of what is possessing him and what to do about it. But one of the ghosts is based on a real man, Henry Hilton, who was very close to one of the richest men in the world. He inherited the fortune of a very rich man, and it was very strange how he inherited all this money. And he built 6 mansions and then spent all his money. And his predecessor's body vanished, after he died. So I always wondered about what happened to that body and why was it missing. So I just thought there was a story there that had to come out, and my novel answers that mystery.
So the capitalism is in relation to this Mr. Hilton.
Yes, Mr. Hilton, yes, spending all his money wildly. And there's a kind of an element of, in Saratoga Springs, there are beautifully preserved Victorian houses. But then right next door in Wilton, pretty much all that history has been erased, the history of, the farming community. So, and it's really become very built up in terms of kind of suburban sprawl. And so that's another kind of theme there that the book looks at is, basically it comes down to wealth. The wealthy community was able to preserve their history. Mm. The less wealthy community wasn't. And so that plays into the ghost story.
So this is an indictment in some ways of capitalism.
Well, of unrestrained capitalism, let's put it that way.
I was going to say, Lolly, that I think of unrestrained business people more as vampires than ghosts. That may just be this election cycle,
Well, I think capitalism has a place in a just world as long as we have some regulation and some fair distribution of wealth.
Unrestrained,
This is a new subgenre, socialist ghost stories. Kelvin.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, it points to a really important point, and that's that when we think about our vampires or our ghosts or whatever, they're all drawn from human behavior. They're all expressions of some parts of ourselves or other people anyway. So, vampires, yes, vampires are in so many ways in our lives we have vampires, and ghost stories sometimes are written to express that more than to scare you.
I want to delve into why this topic interests the three of you. But first, Jim in North Adams has been waiting a while. By the way, if you want to call in, if you believe in ghosts or if you have a ghost story that you think might be true or just one that you heard, 800-348-2551 is our number. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Jim in North Adams, hey, how you doing?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yes, I just want to touch base quickly on an encounter I have that would only qualify as a ghost story, but briefly the setup is I was in a band with 3 other guys in Seacoast, New Hampshire back in the late 70s. One of our members worked late. We had what was called a bottle club as an after-hours club. You could bring your own alcohol, and they'd have mixers and blah, blah, blah. So he was working for extra money. He was working doorman, and one night he was brutally murdered by a guy who was on drugs at the door. And I mean, carved up bad.
Oh,
and And the funeral was about 3 days later. And I don't know why. Oh, well, no, before this, the night So the bottle clubs weren't open on Mondays, but I was working at a nightclub across the street, and it was December, really, really cold. About 3 o'clock in the morning, I was shutting up the club and starting to walk home. It was only about 2 blocks to my house. And through the wind and the snow, there was no life on the street, just snow and wind. But I heard from everywhere, not from one place, but 360 degrees. Huh. I just heard through the wind, I heard, "Jimbo." Huh. Nobody else has ever called me Jimbo in my life,
yeah,
before or since.
Wow.
He
wasn't done. He wasn't done.
Okay.
And so a couple of days later is the funeral, and I don't know why, but they had an open casket. And they shouldn't have, because the mortician did not do a good job.
Oh, boy.
It was, oh my God, yes.
Okay.
He looked like the Frankenstein monster. Anyway,
right.
So we did not go to, my buddy and I didn't go to the interment. We just couldn't handle it. Said, let's go home. This is all I can handle. And amongst other things in the band, I played harmonica. I always carried my harmonica in my pocket. And middle of the afternoon, it was a much nicer day. And I told Danny, who was driving, "Danny, stop the car. Stop the car, Danny. I got to get out." And we were passing this lake. And he said, "Why? What's wrong?" I said, "Just stop the car. I need a few minutes by the water." And so he got out, stood by the car at the road. There was a little embankment with a storm drain going down into the lake. So I decided to go sit on the storm drain. Didn't realize at that point what amazing acoustics.
Ah, okay. That'll be another show.
But, yeah, that's another show. And Danny was our drummer. He was at the top of the embankment.
So come on, tell me
on
what happened.
Yeah, we got to hit a break here. What happened?
Okay, well here it is. We're at the end.
Okay.
And I don't know if I was there 5-10 minutes, and Danny didn't say anything, but I feel his hand on my shoulder, and like it's time to go. Like it's time to go, Jim. He didn't say anything.
Yeah.
So the drumming had stopped. And I feel his hand on my shoulder, and I turn around over my right shoulder, and I feel a physical hand on my shoulder. And
yeah.
Danny is 20 feet up the embankment.
Oh, cool.
No longer drumming, but that hand, mm-hmm, it was a physical hand on my shoulder. I saw nothing, but when I felt that hand, I felt the most abiding sense of peace and love.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
I think it's true that, I don't know, people are afraid of ghosts. I'm more afraid of the living than the dead by a lot.
Right.
Because what I found is that more often than not, encounters resolve with a sense of peace.
Jim, we got to go. We're way overdue for a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Writers Forum today. We'll talk about ghost stories on this Halloween. Do you have one? The first one was darn good from Jim in North Adams. We'll be back. Quiet Sip by Thad Jones, having nothing to do with Halloween. 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. Ray Graff with you. Writers Forum today with Barbara Chepitis, Lally Davidson, and Kelvin Correga. And very quickly, before we get back to the phones, I'm going to ask you all why you're interested in this to begin with. Lally, we'll start with you.
Well, it all started with my grandmother dying when I was 10. She lived with us, and so I really wanted to see her after she died. And so, just long story short, for me, ghosts have always been a kind of a comforting thought. And I do like a scary horror show, but I really prefer ghost stories with kind of happy endings, because it's so comforting. So that's why.
Okay. Barbara Chepitis.
I've had a number of experiences, a variety of experiences. And Someday maybe I'll find out they were not ghosts. They were something else. I don't know, germs.
Interdimensional presences.
Yeah, whatever. But for now, that's the term I have to put to it, you know. And also my husband, who is afraid of ghosts, doesn't believe in them, which I'm still trying to figure out.
Well, I mean, if some people believe what they can. I mean, science would tell you to believe what you can measure.
Yeah.
And so you see these ghosts. I watch a lot of weird shows on TV. And sometimes, you know, you have these ghost hunters. And they'll have these gizmos and electromagnetic readings and stuff. Yeah. And to me, it seems almost counterintuitive to think that you're going to get physical readings from something that is not quite physical.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works, if it's just energy. I went out ghost hunting. I did an actual paranormal investigation.
Did you have gear?
No, these guys were real old school.
Yeah.
They were like, you just talk to the ghosts.
Ah.
You just talk to them.
Right. And so what was the result of that?
I had stuff thrown at me.
What?
Yeah.
Well, did you say something wrong?
I don't know. They were trying to taunt the ghosts, like, hey, you're an angry ghost. Hey, come show us what you got. And I'm like, yeah. In my mind, my writer's mind, to me it was a pre-adolescent boy who was upset.
Ah.
So I got my mommy voice on, and I'm doing like, do you need something? And a piece of metal flew across the room.
Okay. So, I find this so interesting because, you know, these are not beings that we can see if they exist at all.
No.
But they can throw physical objects in our world.
Apparently,
what's up with that?
They threw a stone, and they actually threw a can from the back of a shelf, landed right at my backside.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty unexpected.
Kelvin, why are you interested in this?
You know, I'm actually more interested in literary ghost stories. When I was a kid, my brother and I slept up on a bed in the attic, and my parents had a great book called Great Ghost Stories of the World, The Haunted Omnibus. And it was illustrated by a wonderful illustrator named Lynd Ward, who's considered the father of the graphic novel, with these wonderful, wonderful, creepy pictures. And I think that's what hooked me. But I, as I tell my cast when we're doing literary stories, that they are all true in a sense. They're all about how we act when we encounter something beyond our understanding, and what goes, those people that left us, what they would say to us. And you have so many wonderful writers in the genre doing all kinds of approaches. So that's really been my focus.
Very interesting. Now, let's go back to our phone lines here. It's the Writers Forum with Lolly Davidson, Barbara Chepitis, and Kelvin Correga. The number is 800-348-2551. Janice in Galway has been waiting a while. Hello there, Janice. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good.
Okay, I'll get quick. I'll try to be quick.
Okay.
Years ago, I cleaned houses for people in the Saratoga area for 35 years. And was often in old houses on a regular basis. I had long-term clients, and I was never scared. Sometimes I felt like there was something there. I see shadows in my periphery, but usually I would just kind of to myself mutter something respectful, like, you know, I'm just here to clean, kind of a thing. Never was I scared, but there was one time I was hired by a friend of the family to clean this girl's mother-in-law's house in between tenants. It was going to be rented. And I went to clean this house, and it was a really long-term job. So I was there for a few days and not scared, except for some reason I couldn't make myself go over the threshold into the basement. And I normally do, because if you clean the basement area and up the stairs, that doesn't get tracked up. You know, you don't want it getting tracked up. So you do all these areas. So, but I could not make myself go over the threshold, which in all the years was the only time that ever happened. But I didn't overthink it. I had a lot to do. So I was upstairs later in the day cleaning, and a doorknob flung off one of the bedroom doors, like across the room. And still I'm thinking to myself, oh, an old house, it's not, you know, making up excuses. little things like this keep happening. And then I'm at the third bedroom. And I look up, and in the doorway, sitting in a chair, is a woman dressed in probably late 1800s outfit. And above her is a man, both probably in their 30s or 40s. And the man has something in his hand, and it's like he's getting ready to, like, hurt her, like hit her. And her face then all distorts like a scary movie. Her face all distorts.
Wow.
And then they're gone. Well, I literally freak out. I run outside to the driveway, and I had been dropped off by an adult, young adult child, And I call her and I'm like, come get me. And she's like, well, I'm watching a movie. I'm like, no, come get me now. And so she comes to get me. And the next day I go back, and anyway, I finish it in the light, but I'm like never going back there again.
Wow.
And I waited a whole year, and it was like Halloween time. And I'm thinking all this time, I'm just stressed, just having a mild nervous breakdown. Like, I didn't really see what I saw. A year later, I call the daughter-in-law who had actually paid me and hired me. And I told her, I said, it was near Halloween time. I said, you want to hear a Halloween story? It's like I needed to get this off my chest. Like, and she's like, sure. And I tell her about it. And I said, you're going to think I'm crazy, but, and I tell her, and she says, no. She said, I used to clean that house, and I will never clean that house again.
I'll be darned.
And
wow.
And when we hire people to, you know, like come in and do carpentry or whatever, they won't even stay and finish the job. She said, you're the only person who has said that you saw something.
Wow.
But other people have felt these things.
So interesting.
But anyway, I just, because I literally doubted my own, doubted what I saw.
That is amazing.
Until I had that verification. Yeah, in Saratoga.
I think that's a common response to that sort of experience. That, you know, even, I mean, my husband could see any number of ghosts, and he would say, yes, but I didn't get a film. You know?
that's the problem. Janice, thank you for the call.
Thank you for the call. We tend to discredit our experience.
Barbara, on past writers' forums, and we've done a ton of these, we often talk about that dream state.
Yeah.
Is this connected in some way to the dream state?
I think it is. I think because if you're willing to dive into a novel and be in the experience that you have to create on the page, you're more open to other experiences. You open a door and you really can't close it.
I think we've all seen dead relatives or friends in our dreams.
Yes.
And so, you know, can people experience these things consciously? Well, you can, and the lady which Janice did in Galway.
Yeah.
But is it the same continuum as seeing your relatives and friends in your dreams?
I think it might be. I remember being very angry after my mother died that my siblings had all had dreams with her in it, and I hadn't. I was like, where's my dream?
Yeah.
Where's my dream?
Yeah.
Why hasn't she seen me? But I do think when you're writing, you're doing something where you are actually activating two parts of your brain at once that don't normally go together. This is a little neurology.
Yeah.
The part that daydreams and the part that logically puts things together.
Interesting.
And I think if you're practiced at doing that, as
you train yourself to do it,
that other experiences can sort of travel in along the same.
Sure.
It's called lowered latent inhibition.
Lally, you agree?
Yes, absolutely. I wanted to talk about that issue of real or not, and I guess in many ways I don't think in many ways I don't think it really matters. You know,
yeah.
I think that they are important stories for us, and there are all kinds of explanations. I mean, I do think it's sort of plausible that, you know, there could be energy floating around in various forms, but I kind of wanted to go back to what Kelvin said also about I love the literary stories, you know. I love the real ghost stories, and I listen to some podcasts on that. But in a way, they end up being boring because you never find out what caused it. And with the literary stories, there's always a kind of something thought provoking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the most famous one being The Turn of the Screw by Henry James.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also listening to a really great podcast that that has wonderful literary stories. So let's see, I'll just look it up real quick. It's Tony Walker, Classic Ghost Stories, and the two that I just listened to most recently was The Red Lodge by The Walnut Tree House by Charlotte Riddell. It's like a Victorian era, and The House and the Brain by Edward Bullard Lightfoot.
I like that title.
What a great title.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Calvin, you wanted to join in here.
Brain.
Yeah, I guess I want to say, first of all, that I do agree that the thing about real or unreal is it can be distracting, because you're sitting and listening to a story and you're trying to decide whether it's real or not. It's a kind of a filter for what you're hearing. But one of the things about literary ghost stories is you're not asking yourself that question. You're just merging yourself in the story. And if it's a great writer, M.R. James, Guy de Maupassant, there's a wonderful story, by the way, by Virginia Woolf called The Haunted House. It's 2 pages long. I encourage you to read it, because it transcends ghost story writing. It's just it's a poem. It's just beautiful. But there's a lot of great, great writing where writers have tried, have worked so hard to kind of express for us things that really are true. Things are true about the people that we wish we could talk to, the people that want to talk to us, the people we've lost, what we imagine them to say. And it's a real wonderful world of the imagination in all the literature.
Let's go back to our phones here. We're joined by Barbara Chepitis, Lally Davidson, and Kelvin Correga. It's Ghost Stories today on the Writers Forum. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jake in Bolton Landing. Jake, go ahead.
I was just going to tell the story of Inveraway. Major Duncan Campbell, I believe his name was, 1758, in the Battle of Fort Carillion during the French and Indian War, where he was actually told in advance that he would die at Ticonderoga. And he wrote down in his journal that he knew he was going to die at this date in this place, and then it ended up he did die in that place.
Wow.
Wow.
That's the kind of thing I don't want to know ahead of time.
Well, I mean, a skeptic would say, you know, you're in the army, and you know, there's a chance you're going to die every time you walk out there. But still, very interesting. I've never heard that one, Jake.
Well, to have it documented to say, like, I know I'm going to die in Ticonderoga, which is a Native American name. I believe it's the place of musical waters.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, Sir Gawain from the Arthurian legends apparently knew he was going to die.
Really?
Yeah.
Jake, thanks a lot for that one. 800-348-2551 is our number. Bruce is in Kingston. Hello, Bruce.
Hello. How are you guys doing today?
Great. How are you?
Happy Halloween.
Fantastic. Happy Halloween. So I just wanted to tell this quick ghost story from back home. I'm originally from Rockport, Maine, and my family helped to found the town of Rockport and all that stuff, but not getting too much detail. But apparently my great-great-grandfather, he was the guy that would brew all the beer and all that kind of stuff in the hometown. And when they kicked the British out of the Penobscot Bay, there was big celebrations, all that kind of stuff. And while my great-great-grandfather, he got a little bit drunk, and he was walking home with two pints of beer, and he was walking along, and he came across this bridge. It's called the Goose River Bridge in Rockport, and there were these two men that were riding on horseback that were approaching him. Well, he did what he was doing. He was a little drunk, having fun, all that stuff. He gave them a beer to celebrate that the British had been kicked out. Turns out they were loyalists.
Oh, boy.
And they threw him off the bridge.
Ouch.
They threw him off the bridge to his death, and the locals... Yeah, and the local story goes now that if you are on the bridge on a foggy, cold night in the wintertime, that a man will appear out of the mist, hand you a drink, cheers with you, and walk away and disappear.
Wow. Can you come over to my house at about 4:30? That'd be great.
This is why I like, you know, I don't fear ghosts, and I fear the living more.
They bring beers. Hey, yeah. Bruce, thanks. That's a great story. 800-348-2551. Before we take a break here and then get back to the phones, Barbara Chepitis, you did the, you've been doing the Snickering Witches for years.
Yes.
Are you down to one witch? What's going on?
Sometimes we can get together. Sometimes we can't, because we're all busy, busy women, and Cindy just got a job. And her daughter and 3 grandchildren are coming to stay with her.
Well, fair enough.
So, yeah.
Not casting aspersions upon the witches, mind you.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you doing any gigs? Are you doing anything?
I'm doing tonight.
Oh, you're with Whispering Bones?
I'm going to tell tonight with Whispering Bones. I'm going to tell the story of Dame Ragnell.
And where is this going to be again?
It's going to be at the Abbey Theater at Proctor's. At the Abbey Theater at Proctor's.
Yeah.
Part of the Ace Step at Proctor's.
Outstanding. So what time does that start?
That starts at 7:30 tonight.
Still tickets to be had?
Yes.
Okay.
Through Proctor's.
I'm going
Lynn. I'm going to go. Can't wait.
Gonna go?
Oh, so hang on. Let me get this straight, Lolly. You can go to that, but you can't come in here to Studio A. Is that correct? Am I correct in that assertion?
Well, it was all about close quarters. Like you would be breathing my air. You know, so
we live for
like
that.
It's a challenge.
Yeah. All right. I'll tell you what. I won't give you a hard time. Let's take a break. Zach the Engineer, a scary dude in his own right. 800-348-2551. We'll be back with more scary stories, boys and girls. J.C. Styles, I think that's I Want to Talk About You, if I'm not mistaken. 800-348-2551, WAMC.org. That's our website. You can listen online. You can email us at voxpop@WAMC.org. The lines are loaded. I mean, this is something. So everybody's got a story to tell. We'll get to as many as we can here. Try to keep them, you know, on the brief side, if possible. Let's go to Pete in Albany. Pete, you're on.
Good afternoon, guys. Great show. Interesting. I was in France in 1978, and my friend and I were traveling, hitchhiking all around the country. And we were so poor, we had to stay in monasteries. So we pulled into this monastery, and there's a little old guy with a candle who meets us at the door. He's up the stairs, at the landing of the stairs, top of the stairs, there's a huge painting of Death. And Death is there with this sickle on the side of his belt of skulls. It's a terrifying painting, all dark and just lit by a candle. And the inscribed on the bottom of the painting, it says, in French, it says, "Perhaps tonight."
That's great.
It's not like a ghost story, but it was waiting for the thunder to strike.
Monks have such a sense of humor.
Pete, thanks a lot for the call. This email from Steve in Red Hook. I had an uncle who knew the exact moment he would die.
Wow.
The warden told him. You see that? Okay. And he rightly,
he got us on that one.
He rightly credits Henny Youngman for that. Speaking of Henny Youngman, I remember old Henny Youngman. Last night I went out with a magician. We were driving along. She put her hand on my knee. I turned into a motel. There you go. Okay. Enough with the old jokes. Let's go back to the calls. Betty and Hurley. Betty, you're on.
Hey, yes. I saw a ghost while I was working in Hawaii. I had lived there for a couple years, about 30-some years ago. So I had no interaction with this person at all. It wasn't a dream or anything. It was right after work. And I was walking down the stairs in a very, very old building. And I saw like a missionary lady just looking at me from the bottom of the stairs. I was at the top, very demure. She actually had her hands like in front of her, almost like in a prayer. Mm. She had a little bun on top of her head, and she had this old, old off-white dress with a high neck. And she just looked at me and disappeared.
Oh,
now, this had happened to other people in the building, too, but that was my one and only time.
Interesting. I mean, I think this is fascinating, Betty. Are these just images of things that are tied to buildings?
I don't think so.
No.
I think most often my experiences have been when someone needs help.
Yeah.
You know, it's about needing some help.
I remember when I used to live down in Bedford, New York, when I was working in Mount Kisco years and decades ago. And there was a tavern right in town. It's probably still there. Old place. Colonial times. And I was hanging out. I had early morning air shift. I think it was early afternoon. I was done for the day, having a beer. And the bartender said, yeah, one day I was down in the basement of this place, this old stone basement, and was getting some provisions of some kind, turned around, there's a Native American, full headdress, everything, and then just gone, like, boom. So that's why I wonder, are these just images, sort of impressions of things that happened before?
Yeah, there's a lot of different theories about that. There's a really good book called Will Storr versus the Supernatural. He's a British journalist. And he came to America to go out with a bunch of, like, you know, ghost hunters, demonologists, etc., because he wanted to write funny things about America. And then he had started having experiences along the way. It's a really good book, but he goes through, these are all the different theories people have about ghosts, what they are. And one of them is that it's almost like a taped impression.
Yeah.
You know, like an album or something etched into.
I mean, what do you think, Barbara? You're working on this book. By the way, when will it be done?
I hope by the end of next week.
But really?
Yeah, then I have to find a publisher.
Jeez, so, you just missed Halloween. Well, when it comes.
I had a busy year.
When you. Yeah, apparently. Yeah. When it's done, you'll have to come on. We'll do an hour
on
that. Okay. Lolly, you want to chime in? I can't see your face. If you're irritated and want to say something, go ahead.
I am not irritated. I just want to remind people that the name of my book is Beyond Sight. You can find it in any bookstore and also in the Rensselaer Fire Tuck bookstore in the train station in Rensselaer.
Oh, cool.
Good for you, Lolly.
That's great. They have a bookshop at the train station.
I know.
Really
great.
Yeah,
and it features local authors. It's such a lovely thing, and it's amazing. Like, when you put the books out there, they sell. Imagine that.
Nice.
How about that?
Nice.
All right, let's go to Ulster County, and it's Larry's turn. Hello, Larry.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, can you turn your radio down, buddy?
Hold on, please.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I'll take a number. Okay. It's all good. Hi, Larry. How you doing, buddy? Larry, my patience wears thin.
Larry, how far away was the radio?
Yeah.
In what planet?
Larry's in Ulster County, but the phone, radio's in Westchester County. So, are you there, Larry? All right, go, baby. It's all you.
Be right with you. Hold on.
Oh, geez. You know, Larry, I got a show here. There's only. All right, go ahead.
Right here.
Okay, man, go.
We thought you were a ghost.
You're ghosting us.
Back in 94, a good friend of mine died. And I was pretty well shook up over it. A few days after his funeral, a few nights, woke up in the middle of the night, and I couldn't see his face. I knew it was his shape, his silhouette. Standing in my bedroom door, silhouetted against the nightlight. And it was just standing there. I just looked at him. And it's just as if to let me know he was okay. Mm. I know it's maybe it was a dream, but I think it was really. I think he's just kind of showing up from the other side, let me know he was okay.
Yeah, that is a frequent report.
Yeah.
Of ghost appearances, that it's someone who's on their way out and they just wanted to stop by and let you know it's okay. It's okay.
All right, Larry.
Oh yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate the call.
I think is courteous.
What? Just letting us know everything's fine? I mean, in your investigations, Barbara, have you come across truly malevolent ones?
I have not.
Interesting.
I have not. Not a one.
There was a petulant one who threw things at you, but you thought it was a child.
Well, I was asking questions, so the throwing things were answers to questions. Do you need help?
And throwing the can.
Something got thrown, yeah.
Kelvin.
Yeah, that Sarah Craig, who runs Cafe Lena, told me a story very much like that, where she was in the middle of deciding whether or not to move Cafe Lena out of its spot to another spot. And while she was doing this, she started getting things thrown around in the kitchen.
Oh.
And she went in the kitchen and said, "Don't worry, Lena, we're not going to move the place."
Oh, how about that?
Right. And they kept it where it is, and that's where it is now.
Oh, that's so funny. Mike in Albany. Mike, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, everybody. Thanks. Great show today.
Thanks.
What I wanted to share was kind of similarly where you're going right now with possibly a malevolent spirit or something or entity. But I was born in the mid-70s, and I heard stories growing up about that we lived in a haunted apartment. It was a very old place in the Bronx, very old building. Anyway, but my dad glimpsed it one time, and he described it as like a shadow person. He was walking. He kind of saw it out of his peripheral vision in the middle of the night. And what was interesting was that he always said it had a fedora on, which I thought was an interesting detail. I mean, very random or arbitrary. But anyway, it was kind of like leaning over my crib, kind of looking at me, which seems kind of weird. I think I was talking to it. Long story short, when the internet, you know, so then I was just like, okay, weird fedora hat guy. But when the internet came in the mid-90s, for giggles, I looked it up. And then I saw that other people had the story about a similar figure with the fedora, which I thought was kind of random. So anyway, so that's what's uncanny about that is that it seems to be almost a cultural thing. But, you know, but my dad had never heard any of that in the 70s or 80s. So
interesting.
I'm just seeing what you guys thought if you heard of that.
I have not. There was a Ghost Whisperer episode about a guy with a hat. I remember that.
Huh. Well, that's a great story, Mike. I mean,
and he was malevolent.
He was a malevolent dude.
Yeah, in the TV series, yeah.
Well, Mike, thanks a lot for that one. Let's go to Albany. Peter in Guilderland. Peter, you're on.
Hello. I'm on speaker, or is it better without the speaker?
It's better without the speaker, if possible, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good?
Well, it'll be fine.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
So I was going to read my favorite story, which I recommend everybody read. It's a short story, and I'm going to just read the first two paragraphs of The Cask of Amontillado.
Okay. Poe.
The thousand injuries of Fortunato I had borne as I best could. But when he ventured upon insult, I vowed revenge. You, who well know the nature of my soul, will not suppose, however, that I gave utterance to a threat. At length I would be avenged. This was a point definitely settled. But the very definiteness with which it was resolved precluded the idea of risk. I must not only punish, but punish with impunity. A wrong is unredressed when retribution overtakes its redresser. It is equally unredressed when the avenger fails to make himself felt as such to whom who has done the wrong. It must be understood that neither by word nor deed had I given Fortunato cause to doubt my goodwill. I continued, as was my wont, to smile in his face, and he did not perceive that my smile now was at the thought of his immolation.
Yeah, cool. That's a great story. We actually did this in Whispering Bones about 3 years ago. Okay. And I want to say this to anybody that heard this, is that when you read this story, the very ending of the story, it's good to hear the ending of the story, because what's really profound about this story is not just this fierce revenge that he imposes on this guy, but it's the fact that at the end of the story, he is so completely offset and unsatisfied with the revenge he got.
Yeah.
And it's an important twist in the story. It's a wonderful story to read, though, so I encourage you to do it.
Peter, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. How much absinthe do you think Poe drank? A lot, right?
He did a lot of opium.
Opium?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that would explain a few things. Yeah, all right, let's go to Judy in Broad Albany. Judy, you're on.
Hi, Ray. This happened to me a number of years ago. I lived in a home in Glenville that used to be on old farming property. I had a living room with a balcony above it that you could see the bedroom doors. And it was a warm night. I had the doors open. I happened to be all alone for a change. And I noticed a movement out of the corner of my eye. And I looked, and there standing on my fireplace hearth was a woman who I sensed was beautiful, all in white, billowing sheer clothing with a veil. I could tell she had long brown hair, and I sensed that she was beautiful. And of course, I got frightened, and all of a sudden, she looked at me, and I felt very calm. And then she proceeded to look upstairs at the balcony, at which point one of my son's bedroom doors opened up and two little boys in like 1800s dress came skipping out.
Cool.
And one went down my stairs and the other one went into my bedroom. And then my bedroom door closed. And I looked back and the woman was gone.
That is so cool,
so that
Judy.
Is, yeah.
We have a winner.
I feel like I some people have the power to see spirits and some don't. I mean, not that I believe in them. But I don't disbelieve in ghosts. But yeah, when I hear a story like that, I'm like, okay, she obviously has a skill that I don't have.
That's so interesting.
All my experiences, Lolly, are probably more like yours, where it's not visual. You know,
just a feeling.
It's an impression.
Yeah.
But the impression in my mind can be very visual.
But you're a very, and thank you, Judy, for the call. You're a very creative individual. I mean,
yeah.
What stems from your imagination?
But that's what I always asked myself. That's what I asked myself when I was dealing with that, you know, things being thrown around the basement I was in with Johnny and Chico.
All right. Oh, that's those are the ghost hunters, or those are the ghosts?
Those are the ghost hunters.
Did you know the name of the ghost, Little Lord Fauntleroy?
No, I just had this very vivid impression.
Interesting.
And the only thing that confirmed it is later I had to talk to a friend about it, a woman who does a lot of this stuff. And I said, I've got a ghost problem. She said, is it a young boy?
Like,
we're on the phone. I mean, you know,
how about that?
Very
interesting.
Another quick idea, because we're almost done here, but I just want to put that out there to all the people listening, the thousands, the millions that are listening, obviously, today.
Oh, sure.
Is that when I listen to the true ghost stories, I'm often disturbed by how few people try to talk to the spirit and settle the problem. Like, if there's a crying child in your room, you would do something about it. Same thing with the ghost. Like, if there's a crying ghost, maybe see if you can solve the problem instead of running screaming from the room or, you know.
Lolly, you know that's the first place I go.
Try to help.
Yeah. What needs to be done?
Totally.
All right, well, here's an interesting one. Maureen is in Glens Falls. Maureen, go ahead.
Oh, I'm so glad. this story is about my husband and I, back in the 90s, went to England to visit some friends, and we took a tour of Durham Castle, and one of the rooms, this beautiful, beautiful room with a 400-year-old bed and so on, the guide told us that this was the room of Frederick William Temple, who was the Archbishop at the time, and that happened to be my husband's ancestor. So we got all excited and we were talking about things we knew, and she said, you know, I could arrange for you to stay in this room if you'd like.
Yeah.
If you give me a couple of days. Well, I really didn't think I wanted to stay in this castle.
Right.
But my husband, of course, you know, he was excited about it. So a few days later, we went back and they left the castle door. They gave us a huge key to get in this little Alice in Wonderland type door to get into the castle.
Yeah.
And we were in the, you know, it was very dark. There were no lights. There was no electricity that we could find. We finally found our way to the door we were supposed to go in to go up onto the second floor.
Yeah.
And we get up there, find our room, and you know, the walls on this building were about 6 feet thick.
Oh boy.
And they had built a bathroom in this wall, and we go to get ready for bed.
Yeah.
And my husband says, oh, do you smell that? And I said, well, smell what? I didn't smell anything. He said, oh, flowers, don't you smell like fresh cut flowers? And I said, I don't smell anything. He said, there must be something wrong with you.
Okay.
You know, it's so such a strong
Only got
fragrance.
About 30 seconds here, Maureen, so let's get to the finale.
Well, anyway, after we eventually got into bed, and I was just terrified. And at midnight, he was snoring. I was laying there stark awake.
Yeah.
And someone kissed me on the mouth.
Oh, wow.
And I sat up with a start.
A ghost kiss.
Good thing it was only a kiss. Good Lord.
Well, you know, she said to me, it was a woman, she said to me, don't worry, don't be afraid, I'm not going to hurt you. You're safe with me.
Oh, my gosh.
And
nice.
The next day, we told the curator about it. And she says, oh, yes, that's the gray lady. People have an experience.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Wow.
Hey, Maureen, I hate to cut this off. This was a great call, but we're out of time.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Interesting call. All right, so, Kelvin, tell us once again about Whispering Bones, where you're going to be, et cetera, et cetera.
Whispering Bones is going to be tonight at the Abbey Theater at Proctor's on the third floor as part of the Eighth Step. It'll be at 7:30 tonight. It's about 2 hours long, two one-acts, and it's I hope you'll come. It's a really great set of performers this year.
It really is.
And Barbara Chapatis, you'll be there, right?
I'll be there performing, yes.
That's so cool.
It's quite the troupe. of performers.
Lolly, quickly, how do people find out about your comings and goings and whatnot?
They can always go to my website if they can figure out how to spell my name, which is LaleDavidson.com.
Lolly Davidson. Okay. I spell it the phonetic way for the script, but no one knows that. And apparently Zach did, too, when he puts you on the phone here. Hey, thank you all for being here. Great time. Good luck with the gig tonight, Kelvin and Barbara.
Have a happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Thanks so much.
You're going to do that again. Lolly, thanks again. Support comes from Curtis Lumber, providing materials from start to finish for any size, building, or home improvement project. Daily delivery service available at curtislumber.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the forests, wetlands, shorelines, and ridges that protect Lake George permanently. Projects, events, and news at lglc.org. Once again, thanks to Barbara Chepitis, Lolly Davidson, and Kelvin Correga for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Some really good spooky stories. Well done, people. Appreciate the calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, ghoulish, as always, over in Master Control. Thanks to Susie Chekai, who screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, no scares, but maybe we'll scare up some good food. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough will be back to tell you what they're up to. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 p.m.